All right. Just keep your eyes open.
Will do.
Leia finished buckling herself into the co-pilot seat.
You any relation to Inyuri Forge?
She's my great aunt.
The Falcon roared through the ruined cavern and into the tunnel beyond. As they exited the cavern, in his rear holocam display, Han could see Wedge's borrowed Eta 5 entering the cavern at the far end and following.
Han, this is Wedge. I see your spider.
Where?
On your...
An insectile leg, like hollow transparasteel filled with a sparkling dark blue beverage, came down onto the cockpit viewport from above and behind.
Top hull!
Han jumped. The reflex action might have carried him clear out of his seat, but for his restraint straps. Alana screamed, a high-pitched peal that went on and on. Drathen said a word that, had Han's entire universe not been focused on the blue leg, he would have wished Alana hadn't heard. The spider had to have come up on the Falcon along the tunnel ceiling. The creatures absorbed energy. They soaked up anything active sensors had to throw at them and could not be detected by such devices. They were nature's perfect predators, and now one of them was in reach of his family. Almost numb with shock, but operating on years of training, Han flipped on his energy deflectors and scanned his weapons board. Concussion missiles all gone. Lasers at full power. No. The power flow wavered just for a moment, then spiked back to normal. Ground buzzer anti-personnel blaster operational, but nothing could be brought to bear against the spider. The top quad-linked lasers could not depress far enough to hit something clinging to the top hull. Alana continued screaming, despite Leia's efforts to hush her. Leia's eyes were on the viewport above, and her hand was on her lightsaber. Han wanted to shout, "That won't work. The thing will absorb it and then all of us," but he was too busy. The deflectors were not coming up, despite the fact that their generators all indicated they were in the green. Of course they weren't coming up. The energy spider was drinking in every bit of energy in its vicinity. And now the thruster engine skipped. A miss of less than half a second's duration, but long enough for Han to feel that his heart had stopped for the same amount of time. The deflector shields weren't doing a bit of good. Not true. They were still running. If they hadn't been, the spider would have been draining energy right out of the occupants of the cockpit, or straight from the engines, or both. Han glanced at Leia.
Increase power to the shields. Give them everything you can.
She leaned over her controls.
Tell me you have some plan in addition to more power to the shields.
When I do, I'll tell you.
Alana continued to scream. The spider leg raised, then hammered down again. It was joined by another. This one featuring a ferocious-looking backspike with a serrated edge. Even over the sounds of Alana's wail, C-3PO's voice carried from the transport's aft sections.
I say, sir, I'm not quite strapped in yet. Oh!
They reached a tunnel intersection. Han vectored to port, a hard turn. Being slammed sideways in her restraints cut off Alana's breath for a moment. Han could hear another cry from the rear.
I say, hey!
Followed by a crash of a droid into a Duraloy bulkhead. On the sensor board, the blip representing Wedge's interceptor was close, and his voice came across the comm board.
Han, I have a shot.
Those words sent a new kind of chill down Han's spine. A shot from the interceptor's twin lasers, missing the spider and hitting a ship's hull unprotected by shields, could punch straight through, and the spider was on top of the cockpit pod. On the other hand, Wedge knew that.
Take your shot.
The tunnel walls lit up red all around them. The Falcon's diagnostics reported no new damage. The energy spider's legs kept hammering, and now it heaved itself farther forward, its multifaceted eyes at the aft edge of the viewport, peering down at the living treats within the cockpit. Alana resumed her screams.
No effect.
Wedge's voice sounded as impressed as it did annoyed.
Swallowed up the entire blast. It's like firing into a Yuuzhan Vong coral skipper void.
Great.
Ahead, Han could see a shaft of brightness stretching from floor to ceiling. Sunlight entering through the operations access shaft.
Going up, Wedge.
I'm on your tail.
The Falcon took the right angle turn into the climb like the finely tuned ship not everyone admitted she was. Han could see a circle of sunlight, their exit point far above. The blows of the energy spider continued to rain down on the cockpit viewport. And Han saw, finally, the effect of the monstrous creature's attacks were having on his beloved craft. None. No cracks had appeared on the transparasteel. The viewports were not being kicked free of their housing. Even without the shields operating, the Falcon was sustaining no damage. Something eased in Han's chest, like a Durasteel spring under tension suddenly snapping free. The Millennium Falcon shot out into sunlight, toward the pallid pink sky above. Han rolled her over upright. Things were different than they had been 3 decades earlier. Han Solo wasn't a prisoner, running for his life from a creature far larger, far deadlier than he was. Behind the controls of the Falcon, he was the Falcon. As Han had once been nothing but a bit of food, the fearsome energy spider was nothing but a bit of trouble. 2 seconds later, Wedge's interceptor shot up from the shaft entrance and instantly leveled off in the Falcon's wake. Wedge brought his starfighter above the Falcon, remaining close for further laser fire attempts. The sensor board showed more starfighters and Lady Luck headed his way. Han grinned, happy as a little kid.
Wedge, break off.
What?
Break off. The situation's under control.
If you say so.
The interceptor climbed, dropping behind as it did so. Clearly to Wedge, break off meant be prepared to return at any moment and open fire. Han looked back. Drathen Forge had his arms around Alana, shielding her, though his eyes were as big and as frightened as hers, and fixed as hers were on the monster above.
Amelia!
Han's voice was now calm and strong enough that not only did the little girl grow quiet, but Leia gave her husband a curious look. Drathen, too, tore his gaze away from the unwanted passenger above.
Yes?
Alana replied.
We're going to be all right,
Han assured her. His voice was, even to his own ears, oddly calm. The energy spider heaved itself farther forward, even against the tremendous wind force generated by the Falcon's speedy passage through the air. Now it opened its mandibles. Bluish fluid sprayed from its mouth, splashing across the top part of the viewport. Han turned forward again. He sent the Falcon into a wide, easy loop back toward the shaft.
That's pure spice, Amelia. Notice the way it sparkles in the direct sunlight. It's being activated and used up.
Its legs are doing the same thing.
The little girl still sounded frightened, but she was finding some comfort in being analytical.
That's right. If it were to stay out in the sunlight for too long, I think it would probably die. Leia, stand by to reverse inertial compensators. Everybody, be prepared to get thrown into your restraints.
He raised his voice.
That means you too, R2, 3PO.
Us two what, sir?
Han decreased altitude, bringing the Falcon down to less than 30 meters above the surface. Range to the shaft closed to 1 kilometer. Half. 1/4. Han nodded at Leia, then brought up the repulsors and fired the reverse thrusters at power. The ship's rapid deceleration threw all 4 of them forward. They slammed into their restraints harder than they should have, Leia's reversal of the inertial compensator causing it to do just the opposite of what it was supposed to. Instead of cushioning their deceleration, easing the effects of Delta V, the compensators increased those effects. The energy spider flew off the cockpit as though it were a winged insect, arcing down to the dusty ground. It hit, rolling, kicking up a tremendous cloud of dust as it went, its legs thrashing. Then it rolled to a stop and righted itself, turning toward the Falcon. It wasn't unhurt. At least 2 of its legs were clearly broken, dangling uselessly, but it was obviously capable of continuing the fight.
Falcon, Rogue, I have 2 missiles left and I have a shot.
Han indicated by gesture for Leia to return the inertial compensator to normal mode. He set the Falcon on a slow climb, traveling backward while continuing to face the spider.
Negative on that, old buddy. Just let it go.
Understood.
The energy spider trotted forward a few meters. The sparkles beneath its glassy skin were bright now, sometimes eye-hurtingly intense. It peered up at the Millennium Falcon and rocked back and forth, seeming to gauge the leap. But it must have concluded that the distance was too great. It turned, and with 1 last look back, scrambled the 200 meters to the lip of the shaft. Then it was over the edge and gone into the darkness. Alana's voice was surprised.
You didn't kill it?
Han felt very tired and unexpectedly relieved.
That's right.
Why?
It was just hungry, sweetie. And yeah, it wouldn't have been a good thing for it to get us, because it would have killed us. But the spider's not evil. That's just its nature.
He turned the Falcon around, orienting toward the muster point for the operation.
You don't hate it anymore?
I guess not. Or Kessel, either. Come on up and sit on my lap. You can have your hands on the controls and help me with the landing.
Chapter 26. Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
The raid on the prison was one of the leading stories on the Holonews the next day. Recordings taken by security holocams in the prison and all around the building offered inconclusive visual information. One intruder, dressed as a routine worker, was identified as Jedi Seph Helen. Two black-clad, masked intruders remained unidentified. The three of them had managed to penetrate the lower levels of the prison, though whether they were a team or rivals was not yet determined. Their evident objective was the rescue of Jedi Valen Horn. They managed to enter and leave the prison without taking life or doing permanent harm to any of the guards on duty, and failed in their efforts to free Horn. Outside the prison, mercenary units assigned to the Chief of State's office, having already identified Seph Helen as a Jedi, captured him. But Helen had immediately been rescued by two or more Confederates, both women, one probably a Jedi, who escaped with him. A high-speed pursuit ensued. The last sight security officers had of the situation was of the black-clad intruders in a stolen security speeder working their way toward Helen's two female Confederates. That was the story as the press understood it. It wasn't a lot of information for a press corps voracious for information, but in interviews on the steps of the Jedi Temple, Master Kenth Hamner, demonstrating dignity and poise, denied the involvement of the Jedi Temple in these crimes. One day after the raid, Captain Orrick Harford, now point man for Alliance Security Jedi Order Interactions, made a visit to the temple. Master Hamner met him at the main entrance. The red-faced Harford did not wait for them to reach the privacy of Hamner's office to begin his questions and complaints. Jedi along the main hall, including Jaina, heard it all as the two men passed.
"Where is Jedi Helen?"
Master Hamner gave the captain a cool, indifferent look.
"I don't know, and that is the truth."
"Why didn't you tell us that Jedi Helen had gone rogue, that he would stage a rescue attempt?"
"We told you he had gone rogue."
Hamner's tone was endlessly but not cheerfully patient, as though he were answering the same question from the same hard-headed child for the 30th time.
"We told you when we provided you the list of all active Jedi that he was no longer maintaining contact with the temple and was pursuing his own agendas, hence gone rogue. We don't know his plans."
The two of them walked past a group of Jedi, among them Corrin Horn. Jaina winced to see Corrin, who looked leaner than she had ever seen him, his expression distant and bleak. But as Harford passed before him, Jaina saw Corrin's expression change. Anger flashed in his eyes. Jaina could feel his anger in the Force. It struck her like a slap, and intense as it was, she would not have been surprised to see him ignite his lightsaber and cut the captain down. Every Jedi in the hall turned his way, and Master Hamner gave Corrin a look of worry and caution. But Corrin did not attack, and Harford remained oblivious to him, or nearly so. He rubbed the back of his neck nervously as he passed Corrin, but he kept talking.
"Who was the female Jedi, the one who rescued him from Didal Nyz?"
"We don't know her identity. We don't know that she was a Jedi."
"She was using a lightsaber."
"So does Zalash Ku, who works with you."
"Ku's whereabouts last night are very well known."
"My point is that not everybody with a lightsaber is a Jedi. The recordings I saw cannot even prove that the subject you're looking for was either human or a woman. Take a lean man and pad his clothes properly."
The two men reached the turbolift and waited for a car to arrive. Harford shook his head, angry and frustrated.
"You wish you had been more cooperative."
His voice suddenly became low enough that Jaina had to strain to hear.
"The next step is going to be tracking devices implanted in every one of you Jedi."
Master Hamner drew himself up to his full height and said a few words very, very quietly.
Captain Harford stiffened. Then the lift doors opened and the two men entered. They were gone a second later. Jaina whispered to Kolir, a female Bothan Jedi Knight.
I wonder what the Master said.
Someone right behind Jaina answered.
He said, I would be privileged to show you where such a device might be implanted.
Jaina turned. The speaker was Dab. He had his miniature holocam to his face and was peering into its tiny screen. Jaina suspected that Dab had listened to the Master's words through the device's microphone.
Good answer. Informative, yet insulting.
Dab grinned and brought his holocam down. He lowered his voice so only Jaina could hear.
You know, I'm not stupid.
I never said you were.
They're looking for a female mystery Jedi, and there we were last night, not half a click from the scene of the crime, and you were out of my sight for, well, quite a while. If I had mentioned all that to the captain as he walked by, he'd be pretty sure he knew who the mystery woman was.
His words sent a chill through Jaina.
Then why didn't you?
Dab looked straight at her.
My job is to tell the authorities what I know about the Jedi, not what I suspect. My lifelong job as a documentarian is to show the truth and expose lies. If I conclude that the position of my employers, that the Jedi have to be reined in for the sake of society, and anything the government does to rein the Jedi in is justified, is a lie, it sort of puts me in an awkward position.
He shrugged.
So, I don't speculate. I try to figure out what the right thing to do is, and then do it.
Very much like a Jedi.
Maybe.
Thank you for not speculating, Dab.
So, tell me about Tahiri Vela.
After I left you two last night, did she talk about me?
It took a moment for Dab's intent to click in Jaina's mind. Her jaw dropped for a second.
Dab, you need to stay away from Tahiri.
Why?
Because you look like...
I look like your brother Anakin, and they were together just before he died. And since then, something about him has messed her up. Not surprising. Young love and tragedy. I've heard the stories. But I'm not Anakin Solo. I don't feel I should have to bear the burden of all that he did.
No, you shouldn't. But Tahiri...
I won't hurt Tahiri.
Yes, you will.
I've liked her ever since I met her on Borlaeus.
She was 16 and would never have noticed someone 4 years younger than she was. But I certainly noticed her.
Jaina suppressed the urge to strangle him.
Right. Now that she's recently come out of emotional turmoil involving Anakin, here you are, sniffing around, and things should be just fine.
Accident or not, you showed up when she least needed to be reminded of Anakin.
So, to make sure nobody ever experiences a twinge of pain, I should move to Dantooine and live in a cave.
You could move to Mustafar and jump into a volcano instead.
Jaina turned and headed to the turbolift. Other than specific authorized trips to residential levels, observers were not allowed below the Great Hall level, and so Dab could not follow. She heard his exasperated sigh as she left him. She visited the lower medical level and the chamber housing Seth. She tapped on its door, hoping that Tekli was inside to admit her. A moment later, the door opened, revealing Master Silgall within. Jaina froze.
Master!
Well said!
The Mon Cal Jedi withdrew a pace so Jaina could enter.
Come in! Best for this door not to remain open!
Numbly, Jaina stepped in, and Silgall shut the door behind her. Jaina looked around. Through the portal into the inner chamber, everything was as it should be. Seth strapped to his bed, monitoring devices activated, except that Silgall was here instead of Tekli. Jaina took a deep breath.
How did you,
Am I supposed to be stupid?
People keep asking me that today.
Silgall moved to Seth's side and began scrutinizing the monitor readouts of the devices measuring his brainwaves. Jaina followed.
Of course you're not supposed to be stupid.
Seth Helen tries to free Valen Horn. We can correctly gauge his intent and his relationship with the others in the intrusion, even if the authorities cannot. Jedi end up in possession of Seth. Where is he going to turn up except the temple? Civil of you to keep Master Hamner in the dark.
We were trying to keep all the Masters out of the loop.
Also civil, but not wise. You need me for this.
both for my medical expertise and because I'm the only Jedi in regular communication with the Grand Master."
That revelation rocked Jaina back on her heels.
"You've talked to him recently?"
"Relatively. He's on Dorin, learning the scanner blanking technique Valen manifested. I haven't heard from him recently."
"You're risking a lot."
"We're often called a militant order. But do you know one of the principal differences between the military and the Jedi Order? And please, give me no solo sarcasm."
"I won't. There are a lot of differences. I can only guess at which one you mean."
"The military are expected to follow orders, even when they feel those orders are not what's right. The Jedi are expected to do what's right, even when that course of action runs contrary to orders."
"Well, yes."
Silgal turned back to Jaina.
"Finding out what's wrong with Valen and Seth, helping the Grand Master, that's what's right."
Jaina felt a touch embarrassed.
"I'm sorry we didn't include you from the start."
"No harm done. Include me now. I need to know where your mother is. She and your father were the first ones to contact Seth in his current distorted condition. I may want them to come and see him as he is now, to gauge whether there has been any advancement of his dementia."
"They're on Kessel. I'll get you the direct holocom data you need to contact the Falcon."
Silgal gestured toward the monitor.
"Already we have interesting results. Seth does not possess Valen's trick of blanking the electroencephalus scan. The portions of Seth's brain that are active when he dreams have been seeing activity during his waking hours as well, for some considerable time. These stress patterns here so indicate."
"Meaning that he's, what, sleepwalking?"
Silgal shook her head.
"But he is in some small way in a dreamlike state, which may be the first clue toward determining how to restore him and Valen to normal. So, well done."
"Thank you, Master Silgal."
Caverns of the Hidden One, Dorin.
It had been days now since their audience with the Hidden One, and that audience had not been repeated. Luke and Ben had divided their time among numerous tasks, digging out the chamber the Baron Doe intended to be their permanent quarters, exploring the caverns, and talking to the other dwellers in this lonely environment. Ben grew impatient. Swinging his pickaxe at a particularly stubborn outcropping of stone, he imagined it was the Hidden One's face, a fantasy that gave him some satisfaction as he worked.
"Dad, we need to get out of here."
Luke, shoveling stony debris into a small rolling cart, smiled, the enigmatic, "you're so young" expression that Ben found so annoying.
"Is that our objective?"
"Of course it is. We have to get out of here to continue our mission."
"But is it our most immediate goal?"
"Sure, why not?"
"Ben, what is our purpose as Jedi?"
Ben sighed and lowered his pickaxe. This was going to be one of those conversations.
"Well, to keep the Force in balance and to help people stay in balance with the Force. To detect wrongs and make them right. To serve as models for very attractive lines of boots."
"Let's go back one. Detecting wrongs and righting them. Is there a wrongness going on here?"
"Absolutely. They've kidnapped people, which we can right by escaping."
"Is that the only wrong?"
Ben lifted his breath mask for a moment, wiped his sweating face with the sleeve of his overlong Keldor robe, and lowered the mask into place again. He exhaled, forcing the helium-rich Dorin atmosphere out of the mask, then took a new breath before answering.
"I guess not. These Baron Doe are wronging themselves, too. Following a paranoid down into this hole, pretending to be dead."
"There you go. The Force is an energy of life. These Keldors, in pretending to be dead, are rejecting life. They're unwittingly becoming dead. How much happiness have you seen down here? How much enthusiasm?"
"I'd say it reaches pretty far into the negative numbers. They're all about duty, but not about happiness."
Luke shoveled the last of the larger rocks into his cart.
"So if we escape now, what happens to them?"
Ben slumped, defeated.
"They continue to live their nasty little lives and nothing gets better."
"Correct."
"They brought it on themselves."
"Spoken with all the sympathy and altruism of a teenager who'd rather be doing something else."
Ben grinned, unabashed.
You got that right.
In his free time, Ben set out to uncover the cavern's secrets. First, there was the question of the trigger the Hidden One was supposed to have that would collapse the tunnel leading to the surface. It had been said that the Hidden One could activate it through the Force or by physical action. Ben set out to find where that trigger was. When the largest hall was empty, he searched the Hidden One's throne and the platform it rested on. It took him mere moments to find what he was looking for. The throne, though seemingly cut from a single block of white stone, was not. Close examination showed that it was assembled from several pieces, their seams so fine and patterns so well matched that the deception was undetectable by anyone more than a few centimeters away. The right armrest lifted outward on hinges, and beneath it was a single button, round, black, inset in a red depression. That had to be it. But Ben frowned at the discovery. Would a paranoid mind be content with one easily disabled trigger for his ultimate act? Ben restored the armrest to its closed position and sat on the platform next to the throne. He dared not sit on the throne itself. The Hidden One, a Force user, was even more likely to detect that he had been there if he rested in the seat of power. Ben relaxed, letting the Force flow through him. He thought of nothing but the trigger beside him, seeking anything related to it. Images, flashes of insight about the future. Up. Ben looked upward. He saw only shadows in the irregular stone ceiling 4 meters up, but something there had all but called him. He stood, stepped onto the throne armrest he had so recently closed, and sprang upward, giving himself a little boost in the Force. In the ceiling, directly over the throne, his fingers gripped either side of a hole, about the size of a human head, cut into the stone. He hung there a few moments as his eyes adjusted to the reduced light. Then he saw it. A polished durasteel cylinder protruding 20 centimeters from the rock above. Ben concentrated on it, trying to obtain through the Force some sense of how it worked. He could feel its length, nearly another meter inset in the stone, and machinery above it. Simple mechanical parts made of durable metals. It was simple, all right. Drive the cylinder home, like a plunger, and contact with something above it would relay the signal to detonate the charges in the entry tunnel. Without being able to look at the device, Ben doubted he would be able to disable it. Thoughtful, he dropped back to the platform. In the hall where he regularly trained in combat against Chara, he found another such apparatus in the ceiling. And in the dormitory where he, Luke, and 4 male Keldor slept, another. The next day, Ben determined that every chamber of any significant size had one of these triggering devices in it. The Hidden One was clearly determined to be able to seal these caverns if he felt the need. Later that day, Luke joined the audience for combat training. Not many Keldors were in attendance. Chara was on hand. Ithia, the female who had been beside Ben's canister upon his arrival in the caverns, led the proceedings. A Keldor male, younger than the others, merely sat and watched. Ben went a few minutes against Chara, staff against staff. Chara was still more experienced with the weapon, but Ben was able to defend himself longer and get in more good blows than when he'd first faced Charsay Saul. Next, Ithia took the combat ring against Chara. They were obviously opponents of many years' acquaintance, for Ithia immediately matched her combat style to Chara's. Ithia was more fluid and evasive, Chara more aggressive and direct. The contrast was a pretty one, and Ben enjoyed watching the proceedings. Luke spoke to the young Keldor observing the sparring. "I'm Luke Skywalker." The youth glanced at him, uncomfortable.
"I am Wiss."
"You're younger than most of the Keldor here." Wiss nodded, his attention back on Ithia and Chara. He unconsciously leaned away from Luke as if hoping the man would just leave him alone.
"Will you be training?"
Wiss shook his head.
"I am not a sage. I am a servant."
"But you could still learn. You're obviously interested."
"As in life, so in death."
That statement, so obviously a quote, so evidently a tolerated rather than a welcome philosophy, if Wiss's tone was any indication, drew Ben's attention. He turned to watch his father at the Keldor. Luke frowned. "What does that mean?"
"It means that, in death, you should be content with preserving the skills you had in life. but should not worry about acquiring new ones.
That's the custom here?
Wiss nodded again. Luke turned away from the boy, obviously deliberating what he had just heard. Ben returned his attention to the practice. Ultimately, Chara won each of his three matches against Ithia. When they were done, Ithia laughed.
I am out of practice, Chara.
Chara gave her what, among Keldors, must have been considered a sympathetic smile.
I think so. In the old days, you would have had at least two of those matches.
He turned to Luke.
Will you be sparring?
Luke shook his head.
Not today. Too sore from shoveling. Tomorrow, perhaps.
I look forward to it.
Moments later, Chara and Ithia departed, headed for the Sanisteam, and Wiss followed them out, leaving Luke and Ben alone. Ben gave his father a suspicious look.
Too sore from shoveling?
Perhaps too sick of shoveling would have been more correct.
Ben, they just gave us the answers we needed here.
Did they? The servant, Wiss?
He had one of them, and Ithia the other.
Luke stood.
I need to get word to the Hidden One. I'd like for all the Keldor in these caverns to be present for our renaming ceremony.
Ben stood.
We're choosing new names?
No.
Oh, that's sad. I was looking forward to being Sparky.
Sounds like a name for a monkey lizard.
And you could be Grandmaster Wango Mitfool.
Not in this lifetime.
Chapter 27.
They gathered in the Hidden One's throne chamber, 4 dozen Keldors and 2 humans. As the last of the Keldor servants who operated the foundries arrived, conversation dropped off, and all Keldors turned toward the Hidden One on his throne. He gestured toward the Skywalkers, motioning them to approach. As they did, he offered them a benevolent smile.
It is with whole heart that I greet you this day. I understand that you have determined to choose new names, the better to make your way among us, the better to accept your circumstances.
Luke looked surprised.
I'm sorry, Great One. There has been some misunderstanding. I did ask for a naming ceremony. I did refer to it as our naming ceremony, but I did not mean that Ben and I would be renaming ourselves. It is my hope that we will be renaming some, or all, of you.
Exclamations of surprise and disapproval filled the room then. Ben kept his face impassive, but inwardly he was smiling. Much as he liked causing trouble from time to time, it was just as much fun watching his father do it. The Hidden One's expression darkened.
You have wasted my time!
Luke shrugged.
What do the dead have except time?
And admit it, as annoying as you find my words, this is the most interesting event you are going to experience all day. The Hidden One sat back, clearly not amused.
And who were you going